Access Utah is brought to you by Utah State University Extension, integrating teaching, research, and public service to respond to critical and emerging issues with research-based information. Utah State University Extension can be followed on Facebook.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm coming to you from the middle of the Utah State University campus in the beautiful sunshine, looking out over the quad in the middle of campus just east of Old Main. We're here on the occasion of Utah 4-H celebrating its centennial. Celebration activities will go on today, tomorrow, and Saturday in Logan. And we will be talking with current 4-H participants as well as alumni of the program. We'll chart changes in 4-H over those 100 years in Utah, from agriculture and home ec, which are the genesis of 4-H, to robotics and rocket science, programs included nowadays. Our guests will include 4-H leaders from China, Becky Mitchell, who did 4-H in Utah, now is doing 4-H in China. We'll talk to some 4-H leaders from China. Marcinda Drysdale will join us. She's a 4-H alum. And we'll have state ambassadors, Shandy Richmond and Cassie Breeding. We begin with Kevin Kessler, Director of 4-H and Youth Programs for Utah. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Boy, what a great day it is here in Cache Valley.
It's very beautiful. We've got some hot weather coming, but it's great right now.
It is. If you have any influence at all, we'd appreciate it if you'd carry that out through Friday and Saturday as our activities are going on outdoors here.
We'll put in an order for that. So tell me how 4-H started nationally.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. It started in the Midwest, and what had happened is this land-grant universities were springing up all over the country. They're developing new technology that would help agricultural production. But what they found is they had a real difficult time getting that technology out to the farmers in the fields who could use it. And so they would go out and put on meetings, and the biggest example 4-H has is in the corn area, or corn production. And so they developed hybrid corn, and they'd try and get the farmers to use that hybrid corn. But for generations of farmers, they'd raise their own corn, use their own seed, replanted it, and then produced corn that way. Well, they weren't excited about gambling everything they owned on a year of hybrid corn. So what they did is they started 4-H corn clubs, and these members of these 4-H corn clubs would take this hybrid corn seed and plant it right along the side of their fathers. At the end of the year, what they discovered is that 4-H members were able to outproduce their farmers by about twice.
So 4-H started as kind of a backdoor way to get this education into the farmers.
It really did. It was both things. I mean, they were trying to develop life skills in the kids at those times, but they worked around the topic of agricultural production in order to get technology transferred out to the field where it could be used.
And then, of course, as these young farmers grew up and took over these farms, this technology, I guess they were more open to this technology.
Absolutely. I mean, when you experience as a kid and you see the difference it's made, then you adopt that. Mm-hmm. So the early adopters in those days were the youth, 4-H.
And you had corn clubs.
We had corn clubs, we had cooking clubs and bottling clubs. Most of the 4-H activities in those days centered around 4-H production, and then the offsprings of that are canning and bottling and sowing and those types of things. Hmm.
This was 1902 nationally. So 1912, how did it start in Utah?
Well, in Utah, we had some of the same things going on. We had Utah State University, which is our land-grant university, developing technology. And then, obviously, we were able to look at what's going on around the nation a little bit, decided these youth development programs, 4-H, were a good thing. And so they were started here in Utah. By the time they got started here in Utah, clubs had been established other places. We knew how to do it. And so they were started here in Utah for the same purposes.
So tell me what the 4-H's are.
Well, the 4-H's are head, heart, hands, and health. So we pledge our head to clear thinking, our heart to greater loyalty, our hands to larger service, and our health to better living for our club, our community, our country, and our world.
We'll do a little more of the history, but skipping ahead to today, how many participants and how many leaders?
In Utah, we have about 91,000 participants that are youth, and we have about 9,000 leaders, volunteer leaders across the state. So it's a big program here.
I was reading some of the origins of the clover, that famous clover, which is, I was reading, has the same protection as the presidential seal.
It does. It's guaranteed, it's protected by Congress, and in order to make any changes to that four-leaf clover, anything has to go through Congress and has to have an act enacted in order to be able to change anything. So it is very protected.
So originally, one version of this was a three-headed clover.
It was. It was head, heart, hands, and then later on they added another H, but when that was first added, it was added for hustle. and others hustle. Trying to get kids to be involved. And later on, that was changed to health, which we believe fits us much better now.
So the goal is building young people? What's the goal?
We grow young people. Mm-hmm. And we do that through lots of different areas. You mentioned us in the introductories that we were involved in agriculture. We still are. Our agricultural programs are some of our biggest programs. But what we want to do is we want to develop kids. And so we need to find an area where kids are interested. And then if we can find an adult who's also interested in that same subject matter, then we have a 4-H program. Mm-hmm. So we're doing robotics, we're doing filmmaking, we're doing all types of different scientific experiments and stuff. So we've changed a lot from the early years. But our goal still is building kids, growing kids.
One of the advantages of talking to people about 4-H is that flexibility. If you want to do robotics, you just get a volunteer, I guess, a leader who can do that. And
that is exactly right. We have curriculum in probably 100 different areas, but even if there's an area that youth and adults are interested in that we don't have curriculum for, we can generate programs around that and develop the curriculum as we go. So it is a very versatile program. We want to capitalize on the interests of those kids and then find a caring adult that can help chaperone them and help them do the projects along the way.
So how does this work? You have a youth who enters the program. They just follow their interests. What happens?
Well, what we'd have is in every county there's an office, 4-H office, and people could go in there if they're interested in signing up for 4-H and see what clubs are already established. Let's say, for example, you had a horse, you wanted to be in the horse program. Well, every one of our counties have a horse program, so you would go into the county office and tell them that you'd like to be in the 4-H horse program, and they would sign you up for a leader, or you could start your own club, or however you want to make it work. Like I said, our goal is to have adult involved with the program so they can shadow it and help make it work. But we want that youth to be getting as much leadership as they can out of the program.
Now, there's some famous 4-H alumni from Utah. I was reading Olene Walker, former governor, is a 4-H alumna.
She is. In fact, we had an event every year that's called 4-H Congress. And if you win in whatever area you are in at the local state level, then you travel to the national competitions. And Olene Walker did win in Fashion Review. And she took the clothing that she made there, traveled back to Chicago on a train, and then was able to present in Chicago. Interesting enough, is that Congress in those days were sponsored by Kraft Foods. And so while she was back there, she was able to meet Mr. Kraft and was able to conduct one of their corporate meetings while she was back there. And she contributes 4-H for giving her those opportunities to talk in front of people, learn self-confidence, and those skills that later on made her the first woman governor of the state of Utah.
Sean Bradley, former NBA player, grew up in Emory County, is an alumnus. Phil Johnson, also former assistant coach of the Jazz. So there is quite a list of alumni.
There is. There's a huge list of people who have been involved in 4-H. In fact, we just produced a CD a year ago that has, I think there's 10 national singers that were in 4-H when they were kids that produced a 4-H CD that we have.
What is your experience as a young person in 4-H?
You know, I started 4-H in a little town called Kanosh, Utah, for those of you who are familiar where that is, and I was in the horse program. But interesting enough is we weren't really the group of us. I think there's 12 of us in our club, but we didn't know much about horses or showmanship or anything like that. And so what we would do is we would help the cattlemen with their cattle. We would do trail rides. We would clean trail and clear trail, and we'd help the sheep producers. And so as a exchange for that, when it came time to go to a livestock or to a horse show, they let us borrow their cattle trucks. And so the first horse show we went to was in Nephi, and we had 13 horses head to tail in the back of the same cattle truck, and we threw our saddles in the back of a pickup, and the rest of us rode in a car, and we went to Nephi to the first horse show. Quite an experience. We didn't even know we were supposed to take our saddlebags off our saddles. We at least took our guns off.
But you did know how to do some of the practical stuff.
We did. We didn't do very well in showmanship, but when it came to trail ride, open gates from your horses, or being able to back through stuff, or ride over logs, we killed them in those areas that were practical horse use. But when it come to showmanship, we were a little ashamed.
Tell us a broad overview quickly of what's going to be happening these 3 days.
This is our 100th year of 4-H, and so we're having our centennial here. We have three different events that are coming together along with an alumni reunion. So our events are state 4-H contests. So we'll have kids from all over the state of Utah who have won at their local levels, and will be competing at the state level here for state contests. That's going on. We also have a leader meet that we rotate in different locations across the state, usually held in the spring. Well, it's being held here the next 3 days. Mm. And so leaders from across the state of Utah who want training in different subject matter area or how to run a club or crafts or skills will be here attending 102 different workshops we have going on in the next 3 days. The 32 contests for those who are in contests. And then Friday night we'll have an awards banquet where we'll be recognizing some of our leaders, some of our youth, and we'll start the first ever Utah 4-H Hall of Fame, of where we'll have 6 inductees being entered into the Hall of Fame. And then that all concludes on Saturday with an alumni reunion and barbecue and picnic, hopefully here on the quad if the weather holds out. And we're looking at that to be something that's really going to be terrific. We have about 500 people pre-registered for our event, so we're excited.
And there's a time capsule, I understand.
There is. There's a time capsule that was put away about 20 years ago that we'll be opening and seeing what was in it and taking a look at that. And then we're going to put together a time capsule that'll be closed at the same time to be reopened again in 15 years.
More information, I believe, at Utah4H.org.
Absolutely. If you're interested in 4-H or our centennial celebration or clubs or where your local offices are, go to Utah4H.org and it has the information you'll need.
We are going to, after a brief break, go to a conversation I had yesterday with Peggy Black, who represents 5 generations of 4-H.
That's right. Peggy's been a great supporter for us. We're excited that she's able to be interviewed on our program today.
And later in this broadcast, live from the Quad on the USU campus just outside of Old Main, we are going to be talking with Becky Mitchell, who's establishing some 4-H programs in China. We'll be talking with some 4-H leaders from China. Marcinda Drysdale, a 4-H alum, will join us, and State Ambassadors Shandy Richmond and Cassie Breeding. That's all coming up. Our thanks for this broadcast to USU Bookstore and to USU Cooperative Extension. More coming following this brief break.
Support for Access Utah is brought to you by Utah State University Extension, improving the quality of life for individuals, families, and communities by extending USU to the people. More information at extension.usu.edu.
On the next Putumayo World Music Hour, we'll while away a sultry afternoon in a Brazilian cafe as the warm sounds of acoustic bossa nova and samba float through the air.
O vento faz rendezvous no seu cabelo alinhado, acostumado com meu embolado.
I'm Rosalie Howarth. Join us for Brazilian Cafe, the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Friday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches. And support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Dr. Carl Breitenbach, practicing evidence-based family medicine at Basin Clinic in Vernal since 1987, with emphasis in complete family health, including obstetric and pediatric care. Information is at basinclinic.com.
Right now, in our continuing look at 4-H on the centennial of the 4-H celebration, we're talking with Peggy Black, who's been a 4-H leader over several years, and in fact has seen 5 generations of her family participate in the program. Looking at an article from the Salt Lake Tribune, Peggy Black, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So this started with your mother?
It actually started with my grandmother.
Your grandmother?
Yes.
And
she was a 4-H'er and got my mother involved. And my mom got me involved, and then I got my kids and my grandkids involved.
So when did your grandmother get involved?
Well, 4-H started in Utah in 1912, and my grandmother was probably 13 at the time. So she was a late teenager when she learned about 4-H, and then she became a leader as she had children old enough to be 4-H'ers.
So your grandmother would have been getting involved pretty close to the inception of the program in Utah.
Yes, she would.
Yeah. So I think our understanding, or at least a popular conception of this, it began more as, an agricultural program and home ec and that kind of thing. What sorts of things did your grandmother do?
When my grandmother was a leader, they did mostly sewing. That was the project that they focused on the most. And so she taught her daughters and their friends in the area how to do sewing.
Hmm. Well, where was this, by the way?
They lived in Crescent, which is now part of Draper in Utah.
Okay. And then through that involvement then, when your mother came along, I guess that's how she got involved?
Yes, yes. My mother loved 4-H. She learned to sew, and one of the projects she did in sewing was to do a service project. And in one summer, she repaired 100 pairs of jeans for the people that worked on the farms around the area, and that was what she did as a service project one year during her sewing experience in 4-H.
From your grandmother and your mother, what did they tell you that what they got out of the program? What did they learn?
Well, the reason my mom started 4-H with me was because she wanted me to learn the life skills that she had learned. She wanted me to have a fun way to learn how to cook and how to sew and how to be prepared to take care of myself. And that's what she had learned, and so she wanted us to have that same experience.
I don't know if your siblings were involved as well?
Yes, yes. I have an older sister, and I have three younger brothers, and I'm not positive my youngest brother did a lot of 4-H because he was a lot younger and my mom became ill, but my other brothers did projects like woodworking, and they also did cooking and things like that, which would give them the skills that they needed to be good fathers as they grew up.
And then you have 9 children.
I do.
So then the tradition just continued with your kids.
It did. I actually didn't do 4-H with my 3 oldest boys because we were totally involved in scouting. But as time went on, I realized that I wasn't teaching the things that I wanted my kids to learn. And so when my daughters got old enough, we started 4-H clubs, and all the younger 6, including the boys and the under 6, had a club of their own with their own friends and did a variety of projects.
What were the things that you wanted your kids to learn that you thought they weren't learning, that you wanted 4-H to teach them?
I wanted them to learn skills like cooking and sewing, which both my boys and girls do know how to do. But I wanted them to have experience in being able to teach and to do public speaking and to feel confident that they were able to be of service to other people. And those are the things we focused on in our clubs. We taught life skills in the projects, but we also did contests where they participated doing demonstrations and interviews and those kinds of things so that they would be prepared to get jobs and teach their own children as well as other people that they came in contact with.
I think the program is pretty flexible, right?
If you want your group
to learn public speaking and that sort of thing, you can do that.
You can.
Yeah.
There are these days, I mean, when my mom was in 4-H, it was a little bit more limited in the scope, but in these days, anything you want to learn can be a 4-H project, and you can develop it as such, and it's just such an awesome program in that respect.
I'm interested. You chose teaching and public speaking. You feel those are critical skills?
Well, I do, because if you know how to do something but you cannot share that with somebody else, that diminishes the usefulness of your skill. And so I think it's very important to be able to not only learn a skill, but be able to teach it to other people.
Hmm. And you, I guess you said your boys were into scouting. I think on the surface, you would there'd probably be some similarities between the two programs.
There are. There are a lot of similarities, which is why I didn't really push my older boys to be in 4-H. But as my older boys got married and had kids, they saw the value of 4-H that their siblings had, and that's what they wanted for their own daughters. And so I now do 4-H with their children, and that just makes it more fun for all of us. So even though my older boys didn't really have the actual 4-H experience, they lived through that in our home, and they are living it now with their own children.
So 18 grandchildren now.
Yes.
And I'm reading here about half of them are in 4-H.
They are.
Yeah.
And the other half are either not in this state or they're too young to participate yet. Oh, so but they're looking forward to it.
You probably have all your grandkids in the program. So some of these are in a club that's led by you. Am I reading this correctly?
That's correct. I have a club that has four of my granddaughters in it, and then there's another club that meets in Harriman, but I still work with those granddaughters in their, as the leader for their sewing project.
And so sewing, and then what else do you and the grandkids and others work on?
We've done things like crafts and photography and gardening and childcare. Of course, cooking and sewing. And we've done a literacy project. Whatever we find a need or an interest within our group, that's what we do a project on.
What changes have you seen over the years, particularly jump out at you in the program?
In the program?
Yeah.
The thing I like about 4-H is that it grows with the community. If the community has a need, then 4-H can grow to help fill that need. In our county, we have had a lot of people that are involved in the horse program because there are a lot of youth who own horses and need a place to learn how to train them and a place to show off that they learned how to train them. And another big thing that they've started in our county is a robotics program. And so the kids have an opportunity to work with learning programming skills as well as building skills. So they have had very good success in that.
I believe I'm reading here an experience that is this one of your granddaughters had a learning disability?
Yes, and I think that is one of the big advantages of 4-H over some of the other projects, particularly over the school situation, because in 4-H you can individualize the program. This one granddaughter of mine, well, all of my granddaughters are very involved and love to do demonstrations and work really hard to be prepared, but one of my granddaughters had a learning disability which made it very difficult for her to do that. She was not able to, her short-term memory was not very well developed, and so in order to do a demonstration, she had to have enough time to get the information from her short-term memory to her long-term memory. And at first, because of the experiences she had had at school, her mother was very wary of letting her do that because she didn't want her to be ridiculed or laughed at or thought that she wasn't doing as well as someone else. And so we explained that that wasn't how 4-H is, because that isn't how 4-H is. If you are doing your best, that is how we want you to be recognized. And so her mom agreed that we could work with her, and this granddaughter learned how to do a demonstration making a very simple ice cream dessert, went to contests, and at contests, you don't get any help. I couldn't stand there and hold her hand. She had to learn how to do it all by herself, which she did, and she did a beautiful job. She was so pleased when she got a blue ribbon, and so was everyone else, because they knew how hard she had worked, and she was rewarded for that. And I think that's how it is with every child in 4-H. They are rewarded for the effort that they put in and for the diligence that they have in completing a project and taking the risk to have somebody else judge that at a fair or at a contest. And that just adds to their experience, which then adds to their self-confidence. And when I see a child start 4-H at the beginning of a year, whether it be in my club meeting, whether it be a grandchild, whether it be even a state ambassador that I've worked with, at the beginning of the year, they're a little tentative and maybe not quite sure of themselves. By the end of the year, when they have perfected their program and done a demonstration or stood up to conduct a meeting or even lead the community singing in a group, they are just beaming because they know that are able to do what they want to do, and that they have the confidence to be happy about it and to help other people to be happy. And I don't know, I'm kind of a tender-hearted person anyway, but I'm always in tears at the end of the year when I watch the 4-H'ers and see the growth that you can see that they have made during that year. Hmm. That's why I do 4-H. It's just awesome.
And the organization, I understand it, you focus on learning skills and then teaching skills. And
yes.
You attribute to that the fact that many of your family members have become teachers?
Oh, yes. I have quite a few family members that are teachers. My father was actually a teacher, and so, you know, that gave us the impetus that we also needed to be able to continue that legacy. But my sister was a teacher, and two of my brothers are teachers, and two of my children are teachers, and so it just, and my husband's a teacher, it just continues to be part of our family legacy that teaching is a really important thing.
Well, we are focusing on 4-H. It's the 100-year anniversary, the centennial of 4-H in Utah. And we've been talking with Peggy Black, who is in the middle of five generations of her family participating in the program. Peggy Black, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for staying with us. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, coming to you today from outside Old Main. We're looking over the quad. It's a beautiful day today, looking toward the new agriculture building. And we're talking about 4-H on the occasion of the centennial of 4-H in Utah. Celebrations going on today, tomorrow, and Saturday in Logan, various venues on the USU campus and in downtown Logan as well. And later in the program, we'll be talking with Becky Mitchell, who's a longtime 4-H leader in Utah and now is leading 4-H programs in China. We'll talk with two of the youth who are participating 4-H from China as well. Right now, we bring in Marcita Drysdale, who is a 4-H alumna and leader. Thanks for coming.
Thanks.
We also bring in ambassadors, state ambassadors for 4-H. Shandy Richmond, thanks.
Good afternoon.
And you are from... tell me again where you're from.
I'm from right here in Cache County.
Cache County, very good. And Cassie Breeding from Weber County.
Yep, Weber County. It's great to be here.
Okay, thanks for joining us. We want to talk about the history of 4-H and just talk with Peggy Black with five generations of 4-H. She's very much involved still, but we want to talk about what 4-H is doing for people currently. Marcinda Drysdale, did you grow up with 4-H?
I did. We had a family club, so we did gardening, sewing, cooking, just within our own family. We included a couple of neighbors to make it a fuller group. Great way for parents to teach their kids things with a little bit of structure.
And your parents were the leaders?
They were.
Mm-hmm. Is that typical?
It 4-H? Is. A lot of the counties, if the area is not very populated, they will just do it within their families. There are several counties that have good teen councils that the teens get together and do their club that way. Mm.
And I think you're from Davis County?
I am from Davis.
Yeah, is that where you
Yes.
grew up as well?
Yep.
So your family at least had a garden plot.
A very big garden plot.
Yeah. So the kids getting out there and helping out, that helps out.
It is. It does. Yeah.
What did 4-H do for you then? What did you learn?
Well, I served as a state ambassador when I was in high school. It, first of all, gave me a scholarship to pay for my education here at Utah State. And it also taught me how to give demonstrations, workshops, food preservation, a lot of skills.
And you're now a leader.
I am. I currently am serving as an intern for the state 4-H office, helping with their summer programs. 2 weeks ago, we did a junior youth conference for 5th and 6th graders. We do several camps, and this week we're doing state contests and leader meet. Hmm.
And what's the variety of the programs, the things that the 4-H kids are doing these days that you've seen?
Well, one of the best places to see what 4-H projects there are is the state fair down in Salt Lake. 4-H'ers all over the state compete in their county 4-H, and then if they get first place and are sent to state fair, their exhibits are there. You can see all of the projects, anything from duct tape jackets to robotics, you name it, it's there.
Duct tape jackets, that sounds...
It's true.
Sounds like something I'd like to do.
Duct tape slippers, too. Yeah.
Very
good. They're comfy.
Very good. I wonder, with some of the kids you've worked with, are any that stand out, especially benefited from the program?
I'd have to say, actually, my little sister. I noticed she served as an ambassador, too. Before, she was very quiet and reserved. As an ambassador, you get the opportunity to teach several workshops and get that public speaking experience. Now she's not shy at all.
Yeah, I guess that would do it.
It does.
I was talking with Mrs. Black about the, seems to be a integral part of 4-H, learning a skill and then teaching it.
So yes.
Teaching seems to be
part. I think they get a lot of experience as they go. Starting out as a kid, it's taught to you by either a parent or a volunteer leader. And then as an ambassador or as an alumni, you get the opportunity to pay it back and start your own group or volunteer.
If you just joined us, we're talking about 4-H, and the program is 100 years old in Utah. Started 1902 nationally, 1912 for Utah, and we're broadcasting live from Quad Side. We're looking out over the quad east side of Old Main. Our thanks for this broadcast to USU Bookstore and to USU Cooperative Extension. We're talking this part of the program with Marcinda Drysdale, 4-H alum. And we're bringing in now state ambassadors, Shandy Richmond and Cassie Breeding. Let's start with you, Shandy. What does an ambassador do?
As an ambassador, we teach workshops, we promote 4-H, and we are avid members of 4-H both in our communities and throughout the state.
And Cassie, you have to apply for this?
Yes, there is a 3-month interview process to become a state ambassador. They can choose up to 8 every year, so there's currently always at least 3 ambassadors serving each year. During the 3-month interview process, you do a project that either promotes 4-H or raises money for the 4-H program in your county. And then after you've completed that and you complete a project notebook, you go on to the actual interview, which is 2 days, and you complete lots of tasks there and you're judged the whole time. And it's the Utah application process for state ambassador, I've heard, is the hardest application process in the nation for state ambassadors.
So this is fairly prestigious.
Yes.
To become an ambassador. So maybe starting with you, Cassie, what has been your experience in 4-H? What types of things have you done?
I started 4-H when I was 8, and I was involved in the horse and livestock programs. And I was always been just a shy livestock girl. And then when I was in junior high, my county agent got me involved in the leadership part of it, and I became a junior livestock ambassador. And from there, it just evolved, and now I'm all the way up to the state ambassador. And I love being a part of it. And I think the biggest thing I've learned from my experience is that it doesn't matter how successful that your project turns out. It matters how successful you as a person turns out. And I think that's what 4-H is all about.
And Shandy, what sorts of things do you do in 4-H?
Well, I started out as a 10-year-old girl showing pigs at the county fair. And I started going to our county sewing camps and cooking camps. Loved it. Loved the people I met. Loved the experience I had. I went to state events, learned leadership skills, and it just progressed into what I am today. I love the ambassador program and all that it's done for me.
And maybe looking at some of the kids that were in the program with you in the past or present, what do you think 4-H has done for them?
I think that 4-H can take any person, no matter what their status is, no matter what their circumstance is. If you join 4-H, you'll meet so many new people and become friends with everyone you meet. You learn social skills and you learn to enjoy life and take things as they are and learn to be a happier person. 4-H just makes the world a better place, in my opinion. It's great.
Cassie, is this a family thing? Were your parents in 4-H, brothers and sisters?
Actually, no, my parents were never involved in the 4-H program. My mom just decided that when I was 8, she wanted me to get involved in the livestock program because she knew that I would be good at it, and she knew that I would love it. And then it turned into a family thing. My whole family, we all bleed 4-H green now, and my sister's going to be an ambassador next year. She will be inducted in on Friday night, so that's really exciting. And my younger sister plans on trying out for ambassador too when she's old enough. And my family was just really involved with all kinds of aspects of 4-H.
Shani, what about you? Is this a family thing?
Nope. It's pretty much me leading on the family, and as I experiment with new things, my family likes to get involved too. There's plenty of things for my younger siblings to get involved in, as well as my parents. They can give their time and their service as well. It's definitely a thing that you can get the whole family involved in.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you're both involved in contests. There are a bunch of contests, anything from horse judging to public speaking to anything in between. So, Cassie, what are you involved in?
This year I'm competing in livestock judging and livestock bull, and it's an all-day event, both of them. So I'll be pretty busy competing this year.
Well, good luck. What are you doing, Shani?
I will be doing a talent contest. I will be singing in the vocal competition.
All right. Ed, did you participate in contests in the past?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did the dairy demonstration, talking about the dairy council and milk.
Yeah. So I don't know whether that experience is nerve-wracking as any contest would be, or what, fun?
No, I think the 4-H prepares you pretty well so that you're able to get up and speak easily in front of people.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, and asked Mrs. Black this, but I think people might be curious how 4-H fits in. You have scouting, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you have FFA. Where do you think 4-H fits in? What particularly is unique to 4-H?
I think 4-H is all-encompassing. It gives them the opportunity to meet people from all over the state, and it also gives them the opportunity to learn new things. Mm-hmm. It's not as structured as, say, a merit badge would be, but I think that's why 4-H is so successful, is it teaches the kids to work at their own pace, and the fair gives them the opportunity to have a final product to show for their work.
Hmm. So what are you most looking forward to in this? Are you going to go see some of the other contests, Cassie?
I'm really excited that my younger sister's here this year. I'm excited to see her. She's doing actually public speaking, and I'm really excited to hear her speech because I haven't heard it yet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just state contests, one of my favorite events, because you get to see all your friends from all over the state. So I'm really excited to see all my friends here.
Mm-hmm. As I was reading the lineup, I was a little disappointed when I got excited because there was an event called Horse Public Speaking. And then I realized it wasn't actually the horses they were going to be speaking. But I guess you're just talking about horses. There's a lot of, it seems like, impromptu speaking, public speaking. A lot of these contests help the kids to get out in front of the public. So your sister's going to be involved.
Yep, my sister's doing that. I did it last year. And I think that the speaking contests are great because it teaches you skills and prepares you for things that you're going to do later on in life. So that's one of the best contests here at state contests, yeah. I think.
So what do you, apart from your contest, Shani, what will you be looking for?
I would be looking forward to, like Cassie said, seeing all of our friends. When you're involved in 4-H, you meet so many new people, and it's like every new person you meet is your new best friend. So that's definitely a great aspect. And I also love just interacting with new people and seeing how others can grow from their contests and learning through the 4-H program.
Very good. And Marcinda Draza, what are you looking forward to especially?
Saturday's events, uh-huh. Of course, out here on the quad. We're going to have a lot of family activities. We've got bounce houses coming. We've got a share fair, vendor fair, crafts for the kids, ultimate frisbee, pool noodle hockey. It's the new favorite. So all kinds of activities out here on the quad. We're hoping for good weather.
Well, we're looking forward to the activities on the USU campus and other places in Logan, and more information at utah4h.org. Our thanks for this broadcast to USU Bookstore and USU Cooperative Extension. And we're going to come back after a brief break and talk about 4-H in China. This is becoming a worldwide program. We'll be talking with Becky Mitchell and some friends from China. Our thanks to Shandy Richmond from Cache County. Thanks.
Thank
so much for coming in. Cassie Breeding from Weber County.
Thank you for having me.
And Marcinda Drysdale, 4-H alumna from Davis County.
Thanks.
Thanks so much. Back after a brief break.
Hi, this is Blair Larson, host of Fresh Folk. On the show this week, I feature the new collaboration from Stephanie Bettman and Luke Halpin, as well as the latest from the talented instrumentalist Jamie Bartschy. I'll also play songs from new discs by Sharon Goldman, The Pines, and Honor Finnegan, among other talented artists. Tune in and listen this Saturday at 8 p.m. to Fresh Folk on Utah Public Radio.
Utah State University Extension, a partnership of federal, state, and local governments delivering educational programs at the grassroots level throughout the nation. USU Extension celebrating 100 years of 4-H youth programs in Utah.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. Tom Williams, Quad Side. We're looking out over the beautiful quad, expansive quad on the USU campus, heart of campus, just east of Old Main. And we're here on the occasion of the 4-H centennial in Utah. 100 years ago, 1912, 4-H began in Utah. Just 10 years before that, 1902, it began in the United States. And the 4-H program has been going strong since then. Many activities will be happening on the Utah State University campus and downtown Logan over the next 3 days on the occasion of this centennial, including a time capsule and contests and leader meet. And we have been talking with many 4-H participants and leaders. And we conclude the program talking about 4-H in China. And so we bring in Becky Mitchell. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You've brought in some friends. I wonder if you could introduce them.
Yes, these are two students that from Nanjing University that have worked with me in the 4-H program there. I'd like them to introduce themselves. Give us your Chinese name and your English name.
Hello, everybody. My name is Huang Xinyi, and my English name is Amelia from Nanjing University, English Department.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, hello everyone. My name is Zhang Yihan, and my English name is Tina. And Amelia and I have been working with Miss Becky in 4-H Club in China. Yeah.
All right, and I'll use your English names if that's okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. So I understand it, Becky Mitchell, you have been involved for many years in 4-H in Utah.
Yes.
Tell us what that involvement was briefly before we get to China.
For 16 years, I was on the state 4-H staff in Utah and worked mainly with volunteer leaders, created the leader meet and these kinds of experiences, and also worked with the young people in home economics-related projects and drama projects, a variety of things across the state. I found the 4-H program to be the most excellent one that I had worked with. I had been previously a public school teacher. I've been a teacher educator here at Utah State University. I had worked with other youth development organizations, but I really fell in love with 4-H because I found it such a well-rounded program and fit any kind of area that you'd want to go into. So I was very impressed with that program. I took early retirement in 2000. June of 2000, and my husband and I left for China in August of 2000 to participate in a program from Brigham Young University, a China teachers program. They had placed us at a university there, trained us, and we had a wonderful experience teaching on a very small campus in Jinan, China, at that year. And we came home for a year with some family business, and then went back in 2002-2003 school year and taught at Nanjing University. And during that year, we had the opportunity to organize a little 4-H club in at the university at that time. The students wanted some leadership experience, and we were able to give it to them that way. It was outside their class. They volunteered during the lunchtime to come to our meetings. And through that involvement, we got started with a service project, because that's a very important part of 4-H. And that started in 2003. We called it the Sunshine Project. That was the name the students gave the project. So that's how we initially got started with 4-H. And that project is still going. We'll celebrate 10-year anniversary next spring in 2013. And then after we had been there for a few years, we had to be home for some years while I was helping take care of my aging parents. And after they had passed away, we wanted to go back. We'd been keeping this project going long distance with colleagues at Nanjing University. So in 2009, we returned to Nanjing University to teach. And that's where I met these young women. And they were in the English department. I was teaching some in the English department and then a class in American history and culture, where we got more students involved, and they picked up and started helping us with 4-H and this project, the Sunshine Project.
So the original beginnings, leadership, was that the main impetus? They wanted to have leadership experience?
Yes. This was interesting because of my experience in 4-H and doing these things in my class. I use an experiential method of teaching, and I ask the students, I need some leaders to help me with the library, to help me take a role and do these things. I asked for volunteers. They all volunteered. They wanted to have these experiences because their educational system is quite different than ours, and they don't have the opportunity at high school or middle school to be involved in extracurricular activities, to have those experiences. They don't have teams like we do in our high schools. So when I saw this, we rotated it around, but then we were teaching on the satellite campus at Nanjing University, and we had to take the bus across the Yangtze River to this satellite campus. We taught in the morning, and then they have a two-hour break for their lunch. And some of them go take a nap at the dorm or whatever they want to do. And then we'd had this two-hour break, and then we teach classes at 2 o'clock till 4 before we get the bus to go back. So I said, well, any of you who want to come in, you know, at 12:30, from 12:30 to 1:30, we'll do 4-H clubs. So that's how we got organized. And then they started we made the project leadership at that time, and I taught some specific things. And for their project, they had to help me plan and implement a Christmas party, and things just rolled from there. And they organized and helped us with the Sunshine Project.
If you just joined us, we're talking about 4-H on the occasion of the centennial in Utah. Celebrations ongoing today, tomorrow, and Saturday in Logan. And we're coming to you from next to the Quad. We're looking out over the beautiful Quad on the USU campus just east of Old Main. Our thanks for this broadcast to USU Bookstore and to USU Cooperative Extension. Let's talk to English students from China who are participating in 4-H. Amelia,
yes?
How did you get involved, or why did you want to become involved with 4-H?
You mean, why do I want to become?
Uh-huh.
'Cause I got acquainted with the concept of 4-H when Miss Becky was teaching us, and I think this is really good. And because I have never, like, know this kind of thing before, you know, because Chinese education system is a little bit different from Americans. So when Miss Becky get us involved in group doing things and work together, like, she really favored teamwork spirit, and we are able to accomplish some things that seems impossible in Chinese students' mind. So I fell in love with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been doing 4-H?
Like 3 years?
3 years.
Yeah, 3 years.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. And Tina,
yeah,
what kinds of things do you do in 4-H? What kinds of projects?
Just we had the leadership courses. Just Miss Becky gave us the leadership course and to teach us how to improve our skills and how to organize activities. And also we will go out to Gaochun Special School, a special school for deaf children. And we went there just every year, and we had a lot of activities with the deaf children. And for example, we will have the fun run, just lead them just to run in the playground. Mm-hmm. And also we had them fly the kites, a lot of things, and we let them do the sandwiches just like that to make them communicate with us students from universities and other people, and so they can get to know the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you've learned from 4-H?
Actually, I've learned a lot from the 4-H program. Because first, Miss Becky just teaches us to cooperate with each other and to organize just different things and to do volunteer work. So I really like to participate in volunteer work, and I learned that I need to do more volunteer work in the future and to serve more people. I think that service is a really important thing for me and really is life changing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Amelia, will you be doing more volunteer work in the future?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What are you interested in doing?
I think I'll keep in contact with Tina because I will not be able to stay in Nanjing University, but I think I'll be able to contact her and to see what a program goes on and offer my help. And also, I will find chances like to teach children and to help the people in rural areas because I love children very much. And
they love her.
I imagine. Becky Mitchell, is this a growing program then, not only in place where you were, Nanjing, or other places in China?
That will depend on the students, what they take and do. We did have one of our students from the leadership class organize a 4-H Rainbow Project at a very rural school in Gansu province in northwest China. And that is going very well. She's using the concept of cooperation, working together. She even got the government to build new classrooms for this school. These classrooms had been damaged in an earthquake and were old and very dilapidated. And they are making great improvements there with the 4-H concept. So I'm hoping it will grow. Another thing these students have done this last year, we are getting up some websites, but they are taking over more of the leadership of doing the fundraising we need for these projects. And they have a site now on what is the Chinese version of eBay. And students, anybody can, anywhere in China, can go on that site and make a donation to our project. And so the students are picking up on these things that I think will make it sustainable. And this is a way we can do. I'm going to be home now for a while, and our family wants to organize a nonprofit that will support service projects like this, as well as other projects, not just in China. But we're working on different ends of this. But I'm very excited to see how the students have picked up on these concepts. The things they've learned and what they've been able to do is truly a miracle. Exciting. They're doing great things.
And I imagine it'll be fun to participate in the conference and then take some of these ideas back to China. Yeah. So we've been talking with Becky Mitchell, who's involved in 4-H in Utah, now has exported it to China. And the hope is it'll continue through some of the students. So thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Amelia, thank you.
Thank you.
Tina, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy your visit. We've been talking about 4-H on the occasion of the centennial in Utah, celebration and activities going on in Logan today, Friday, and Saturday. And more information is at utah4h.org. Our thanks once again to USU Bookstore for this broadcast and to USU Cooperative Extension. And we've been broadcasting from beside the quad on the USU campus, just outside Old Main. Beautiful day here. And thanks for tuning in. By the way, tomorrow we'll be at our downtown studios on Main Street in Logan, and we'll be previewing some great summer activities, including Utah Festival Opera and Utah Shakespeare Festival. That's coming up tomorrow. Thanks for listening today.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.